This is NPR Illinois. I'm Jamie Dunn. The presidential election highlighted a political divide that is so deep, citizens in Illinois and across the country can't even agree on the same set of facts. This week's Illinois Issues In-Depth Report is an essay that takes a look at how that divide has played out in Illinois and how the proliferation of partisan and fake news sources may be deepening it. I sat down with Dan Hagen, the author of that piece, to talk about it. Your essay looks at the political divide in the country that was highlighted by the presidential election. It seems probably has been there for a while, but people are really paying attention to it now. Right. How has this divide played out in Illinois?
We're in a budget paralysis, apparently, for the second year running here. So, I mean, the government in Illinois is not functioning at all. So I think Illinois was kind of a harbinger of the national political divide. We're talking on a day when we just, some guy just shot up a pizza place because he believed a fake news story. We're getting all these sorts of things about fake news stories and people not believing the truth and having their own reality. It's all coming to the fore now. If you don't know what's going on, if you don't know what the facts are, you have no idea what you're supposed to do. And I think that's the source of a lot of our political trouble.
And how is that, you know, all this fake news and difficulty with discerning the truth from fiction, how is that playing into our dividedness?
Well, I would say there is no possibility of reaching compromise or agreement on any issue if we have separate sets of facts. You know, if you can merely assert, we don't need trees because we don't need oxygen, we can breathe methane gas, then there's not much we can talk about. So until we find some way to find a common pool of what we will agree are the facts, we're utterly divided. There's no way we can bridge that divide.
You made the point in your essay that in the age of social media and, you know, sharing so much information online, that people have not really become their own journalists, but they've become their own editors.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
That was an observation a journalist media critic made years ago, that perhaps we would be our own journalists now. We would all go out and, dig up the facts and publish them, and then that would be okay. We wouldn't have to have paid journalists. I think the U of I media critic, Bob McChesney, said, yeah, that's right. You know, some guy who works in a coal mine is going to come home and have dinner, and then late at night he's going to go out and write about the city council meeting for you. You know, that's not going to happen. But the idea that we're all our own journalists, and it's not that citizen feedback hasn't helped journalism. It has. It helps correct errors, I think, now in the threads and so forth. But we're not all our own journalists. We are all our own editors, because the source of the news for everybody now is the individual news feed in your digital media. And you pick what's going to be in the digital news feed. You pick your interests. You reject things you don't want to hear about or sites you don't want to hear about. And, of course, that creates a digital bubble, a digital bubble that's mirrored. You only see the things you want to see. You don't see the things you don't want to see. But, of course, if there's an asteroid heading straight at you, that may be something you don't want to see, but it's something you need to know about. Therein lies the problem. In traditional journalism, the newspapers, the Chicago Tribunes and the New York Times, would tell you things that weren't pleasant, that you didn't want to hear, but that you needed to know. If you don't know those things, you can't function in society, really. Now, so really, this part of this is just a function of the media itself. Marshall McLuhan, you know, warned that your communications technology, you create it, and then you, as a society, it controls you in some ways. You create the tool, then the tool uses you. And that's kind of where we are. We haven't figured out a way around that, I don't think. It's natural. You don't want to hear things you're not interested in, but sometimes you need to. It also leads to that business of just because you believe something doesn't mean it's true, you know, and the more people who believe it, that doesn't make it any more likely to be true. And yet we almost seem to have forgotten that. It's incredible to me. It's incredible to me that we have to go to bat in defense of verified facts.
My family was just in town, and my brother graduated from a library science master. Uh-huh. So we're both information people, you know.
Right, right.
And we sat down with our family and kind of walked them through how they can look for things being fake, you know,
right.
Because there's no formalized
No.
Way for people to learn this. So what might improve the situation when it comes to this fake news?
Well, you know, there is, first of all, we need heavy critical thinking training, I think, from grade school on up. That would help a lot. And I guess the kind of training journalists get or used to get, which is how you verify things, how many sources you get. You know, you get more than one source, for one thing. You're more likely that what you hear is going to be true. Be familiar with all the logical fallacies like post hoc ergo propter hoc. Pat Robertson will say, well, you know, the reason there's so many school shootings is because they stopped having organized school prayer. Well, by that reasoning, drinking milk causes heroin addiction because every heroin addict once drank milk, therefore milk causes heroin addiction. That's post hoc ergo propter hoc. Just because something came before something else doesn't mean it caused it. And yet you hear that kind of argument all the time. That argument is passed off for plausible political debate when it's just nonsense. Critical thinking is one factor. Try to find a variety of sources you trust. I think right now, maybe look overseas for viewpoints too, the BBC and various other viewpoints that aren't beholden to American corporate powers might help in terms of trusting the news media.
And you talked with John Jackson, who's a professor at SMU, mm-hmm. who looks at state and national politics. How did he describe the ways that this difficulty with telling fact from fiction is impacting Illinois, especially in terms of our budget?
He was right on the same page with me when I talked to him about it and mentioned that, for example, the surveys at the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute show that people in Illinois believe that you can clear up Illinois' budget mess simply by eliminating fraud and abuse. That's not true. That's long gone. That will have no impact at all on the depth of our budget issue. And if people believe that it does, they're misled and they don't know what the solutions are. So they believe things that aren't true based on half-truths or falsehoods. And that helps reinforce the political paralysis in Illinois. And meanwhile, the budget, the quicksand situation just gets worse.
You can read that essay from Dan Hagen for Illinois Issues and find out more about news literacy, fact-checking, and how to find credible information at our website, nprillinois.org.